This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Lindsay Jeffries was in high school, she got her first taste of flying, part of the junior ROTC program at Broughton High School in Raleigh, and had a chance to fly a small fixed-wing plane and then a Black Hawk helicopter. And she had no idea that the seeds planted in that moment would become her passion. Today, Lindsay is the first and only African-American female Black Hawk pilot for the North Carolina National Guard. She's a medevac detachment commander, and when she's not flying, she serves as a couples counselor. Captain Lindsay Jeffries, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Tell us about your responsibilities now as a Black Hawk helicopter pilot and your full-time National Guard. So tell us what does it mean? What do you do?
So what it means, it's a little different because I'm in the National Guard, but during the weekday, I'm a DOD civilian, so I'm a technician. So the chain of command and the responsibility kind of shifts, but I'm still that commander, but not operating in that commander mode. So my position during the week is a technician, and I'm in a pilot position, so I'm flying the same helicopters that I command. And it's essentially, I'll be on the flight schedule when we're going to have to be held to the same requirements as active duty pilots. And so that's why there's a facility for all National Guard pilots to fly on a weekly basis so that we can retain our proficiency.
And tell us about the Black Hawk. I mean, certainly Americans are familiar with the term Black Hawk helicopters, but as I looked into this, I realized how little I knew about what they do and what kinds of missions they get called on to do. Tell us more.
Yes. So typically in the Army, we have two sets of missions for the Black Hawk. It'll be the assault or the medevac. And I was initially assault, and that's air assault, where we put troops inside and then we'll land and allow the troops to get on out. So we're going to be on a time on target. And then as I've increased in rank and responsibility, I transitioned to the medevac, in which we're going to be securing the wounded and transporting the injured. So those two missions, they can kind of conflict with the Geneva Convention. We can have weapons on one, we can't have on the other. So there's a lot of things that you have to be and that I have to be aware of as I switch from assault to medevac to make sure we protect that health.
But in all cases, you are hovering in battle conditions anyway, under fire, and you're probably the only thing there that is stopped dead in the air.
That's
just
correct.
Waiting to either let people off or get people on.
That's
Everybody
correct.
Else is running like crazy.
That's right. That is correct. We have to train for that. We train time on target. We train to land quickly and effectively. Like my flight paramedics, they'll practice loading a lift, a litter, and getting injured patients on and getting them back off in expedited time.
And you're doing it while you've got, it's a very big helicopter,
it
right?
Is.
This is, not,
is.
Not a small thing. It can travel relatively quickly, but your stuff is dangling from the helicopter. So trying to keep everything in balance and from tipping over, I just find that I never stopped to think about it. And as I did, it became more and more astonishing to me that anyone can do this.
It is. It is scary. The very first time you do a sling load or attach anything to the bottom or even a hoist from the side, the very first time you have to realize there's something on the outside of the helicopter, which adds an incredible amount of risk. Because what if something happens to it and it gets into the rotor blade? And now the center of gravity has shifted and our lives are at risk that we wasn't before.
And tell us about the medevac part of it now on your in terms of your daily activity or your mission today. Medevac for whom and what kinds of cases do you get called on?
So we don't operate in a medevac capacity for the state of North Carolina, where we are planning on deploying and planning on acting as a medevac in an emergency. Mm-hmm. So we won't perform in that function Monday through Friday.
Right.
Whereas when we have state emergencies for hurricane relief, when we have Florence and Dorian, that's when they're going to activate the National Guard so we can resupply. And we have a Hilo Aquatic Rescue Team in which we send individuals that are EMS civilians down on the hoist to rescue anybody from swift water. And so the 1 week out of the month and the 2 weeks out of the year is when we're really focusing on medevac collective training.
So tell us how you got interested in this. You signed up for the National Guard in 11th grade, right?
That's right. I was 17 years old, and I knew I wanted to go to college. I wanted to go to UNC Chapel Hill, and I didn't want to worry about debt. And I said, I'm tough. I can join the National Guard, tell people what to do, and they can pay for my college. That was my motivation. And I did ROTC in high school, Air Force Junior ROTC at Broughton. And as you mentioned before, that one flight kind of planted a seed, but I never revisited it ever until the opportunity was in front of my face. And I said, whoa, I can actually attain this. This wasn't a something that I sought after that was in front of my face every day that I saw the goal. It was sparked, and then I thought it went away, and then it came back. And so ultimately, when I joined the National Guard, my mom had to sign. She said, you know, if this is what you want to do, you know, I'll sign. And if it's a mistake, you'll learn from it, but I'm going to support you. So this year will make 15 years. And I'm enjoying it.
15 years, so post 9/11.
So
signing up for the National Guard was not an easy decision for you or your mother.
That's right.
I would think even more difficult for her. This was now understood as potentially dangerous work.
That's right. She also understood that I was in the 11th grade, so they couldn't send me anywhere until after I graduated high school. Mm-hmm. And then when I got into ROTC at UNC Chapel Hill, I couldn't go anywhere for 4 years. So we were all under the assumption that all of education will get taken care of. And then if you go, you go. But it wouldn't be in the next 5 years.
Now, this commitment to education and the fact that it was such a rigorous goal on your part really also has a backstory. You moved around a lot as a child,
right? We did. We moved around a lot. A little bit of instability financially. We're just trying to, my parents were definitely trying to make the best of what they could. My dad wasn't in the home, but I would visit him some summers. But my mom, she had, it was her and my stepfather, and she had four kids in the house. So they would change jobs frequently, and we would transition. And so in my mind, I wanted to have a stable home when I grew up, something that I could influence. And for me, it started with education. And we had a social worker when we were younger, and I love the way that she helped our family, and I wanted to do that. So that's what got me into the soft sciences and helping sciences.
And even before that, you had a real pivotal moment in the fourth grade.
Oh yeah, I had to come to Jesus moment. That's what I call it. In fourth grade, it wasn't a hard press to make straight A's and anything, like make good grades. My mom is just like, make me proud, do your best and carry on. And I wasn't really taking that to heart. And when I brought back grades home, we got in trouble, got on punishment, got things taken from us. But in the fourth grade, that's when I decided that I'm going to change something, because I failed the fourth grade. And that summer, oh, it was the worst summer ever. I just cried and cried because all of my friends were going to the fifth grade. And I said, you know what? I'm going to make a change for myself, because I don't like feeling left behind. And after that, made straight A's. And then fifth grade, continued on with the A's, and then sixth grade. And then my sights for UNC Chapel Hill was in ninth grade. So from that fourth grade, had I not failed, I don't think I would be as motivated to do well in education and seek that stability.
Well, that's fascinating, because that's the motivation, again, to get the grades to put you in a position by 11th grade to be considering UNC Chapel Hill. Then you think about the financial side of it, the National Guard, you have that flight. And there's one of the jobs that you had along the way at Zaxby's also helped frame your thinking.
It really did. I worked at Zaxby's from ninth grade, and I was a cashier, and I loved it. I just loved it. It was my first real job. And all throughout high school, I worked there all 4 years. And then once I graduated, I needed to take a year off from college, because my advanced individual training for an aviation operations specialist ran into the fall semester. And it required me to stay in a civilian job longer. So they sent me to become an assistant manager, and I was excited about it. And one day, my friend that worked there told me that the general manager said, well, this is all Lindsay's going to do. And she texted me that, and I'm like, oh, I got to ask him about that. So the next day I get to work, and I said, you know, Keisha told me that, you know, you said this is all I was going to ever do. And he said, well, yeah, he admitted it. I'm thinking, no, this is the worst thing you could do. Please just lie to me. Lie to me in this confrontation. And he said, yeah, well, so-and-so said they were going to go to college, and then they got pregnant and came back, and so-and-so dropped out of school, and then they came back. And he was just listening to a lot of the people that were in my position that said they were going to do bigger, and they did not. And so I said, well, now I have to put my 2 weeks' notice in, and I'm going to have to leave. Wow. So that was my first time standing up for myself to know he knows that I'm going to Carolina. He knows that I'm in the military. He knows of my dreams, but he still said that. So I needed to draw the line. I called my recruiter, and he talked to his buddies, and the Master Sergeant was able to get me on orders within the next week. And he's like, hey, we can use soldiers, active duty, great soldiers like you full time to help you build that stability. And I ended up working on active duty special work orders every summer between college. And wow. saving that money allowed me to buy my second car, but my first real officer car.
Wait, what's an officer? I'm sorry.
It just had a different look because my first car was a 94 Toyota Corolla. Okay. And that was my baby. Okay. But my officer car was a 2008 Cadillac CTS. So it was it had a different look to it.
Okay.
And a different feel.
What an extraordinary decision. I mean, to think about the position you were in, you had these plans, you understood that having a job was critical to going on with this training. But obviously in this position, you felt like your integrity was at stake.
I felt I needed to defend myself yeah. and honor what I knew. And I knew that I was going to be more, and I knew that I was more. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been faced with a lot of people telling me that I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that at this point in life. There wasn't a lot of people saying, oh, no, you're not going to go to college. I didn't hear that no or that mm-hmm. naysay a lot. My family was supportive. So hearing this guy say that, it made me think about all my other friends that I knew that had naysayers in their life. And I'm like, oh, no, we're mm-hmm. not. We're not going down that path. And so I needed to stand up for myself.
You talked earlier about the fact that you had this experience in high school flying, but you didn't realize it wasn't until later that you made the decision to actually take pilot training and become what happened in the meantime?
In the meantime, so when I joined the National Guard, my recruiter said, you know, what job do you want? And I said, something that was short. I needed a short training. So I chose my initial job based on the duration of training. And that happened to be an aviation operations specialist. So I said, okay, they're going to talk to pilots and do their flight pay and flight following, flight tracking. I can do that. And so I did that. And then I thought once I went to college, graduated, I would still do that same job until they said, no, you're an officer. You got to do something different. I said, well, what options are there? And they're listing, you know, adjutant general, logistics, chemical. And then they're like, aviation. I said, well, wait. I can at least talk to the pilots on the radio. What's aviation? They said, oh, you'll be a pilot. I said, oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'll do that. Wow. And I had, at that moment, I was like, I've already been introduced to it. I've had that first flight back then, and I've been talking to the pilots now, and I'm on the radio, and this is my opportunity. I'm already experienced it. I've always been introduced to it. I'm going to continue on. And I said, the Army's going to teach you everything you're going to need to know. So any prior knowledge would be helpful. But if it was incorrect, you have to unlearn what you've mm-hmm. already known and relearn what the Army wants you to learn.
The Army can teach you almost everything, but I don't know that the Army is yet in a position to teach women how to navigate in what is still a predominantly male-dominated world.
I agree. There is different support systems and mentorship programs and sisters in boots and beauties in boots and beauties in brains. There's just so many different programs, civilian side and in the military, to try to close the gap, but with the disparity and with the history of the military being an all-male force, mm-hmm. it's going to be a long road to
go. Has it been difficult for you?
No, it actually has not. Because I've been in for almost 15 years, a lot of the individuals know me when I was a baby, a 17-year-old mm-hmm. coming in. So I don't see, I see a lot more support than any backlash. And if there was a hint of it, it was a new person who didn't know me. And they're like, oh, no. We don't do that. We don't do that to her. We don't do that to anyone. But I have more support yeah. for other people to help protect me and speak up for me than I knew. I would always hear stories from like through the grapevine, like, oh, so-and-so said this, but he said that. And I was nowhere around. And so through the stories, I've learned that if there was some type of strife against me, individuals that had my back, they were going to speak up for me. Very little individuals say it to my face. Wow. That would just be a different course of action.
I can tell. I can tell already just from the short time we spent together. So medevac helicopter pilot, when you're not saving lives, you're saving marriages. You're a counselor. Tell us about that job.
I love it. Counseling is my other passion. That is something that I've always enjoyed, talking to people about relationships, my mm-hmm. best friends or my sister and her husband or my cousin and her fiance, just someone. But not only the women, but the men would also see me as a mediator or someone that's not going to be jaded towards the person that I love and know, or just being a female. And so after I got back from fight school, I knew that I was going to get a master's degree, and I didn't know what I was going to get it in. I got my undergrad in sociology and psychology, mm-hmm. and I said, Well, I was praying about it and listening to this radio station, and they said that, well, God is going to give you your purpose, but until he gives you your purpose, you'll know your passion and you'll do it without getting paid for. And at that moment, I was like, well, what am I doing now? Counseling all these people and couples. So that's what made me go to UNCG, get my master's in counseling, and I focused on couple and family, switched over to clinical mental health, and completely enjoyed it.
Well, I wonder what you're seeing now. I'm reading so much about the levels of anxiety, depression on the rise. And in the midst of all this plenty and technological, I mean, things couldn't be easier for us. And yet things are much more difficult. How are you reading all of that?
It is so true. The amount of anxiety and the fear of missing out and the fear of everyone having a perfect life on social media. And you're feeling like, well, they're traveling. I'm not traveling. Well, they're married. I'm not married. Right now, the anxiety is on a rise and depression is on a rise because of the quick access to other people's lives. Mm. Whereas before, you didn't know what you were missing out on. You didn't know how you measured up. But the idea of comparing, that comparison factor, you start measuring yourself down or up, or you have to put someone else down to make yourself feel better. It's a lot, and it's on the rise. And I am a complete advocate on everyone having a therapist or everyone having someone to talk to that's going to hold you accountable and give you that positive reinforcement and reflect back those thoughts that are in your head and encourage you to know and learn yourself.
What a pleasure talking with you. Captain Lindsay Jeffries, first African-American female Black Hawk pilot for the North Carolina Army National Guard, and so much more. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
She's a medevac commander in her spare time and a licensed professional medevac commander, and in her spare time, a licensed professional counselor at Brighter Days Counseling in Salisbury. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also find out about our next movies on the radio, your picks for the Academy Awards. Forget what they're going to do in Hollywood. What was your favorite movie from 2019? SOT at WUNC.org to be on the next movies on the radio, and we will roll out the red carpet just for you. Our website is stateofthings.org. Our producers are Anita Rao, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Holub-Mormon. Jenny Lawson is our technical director, Josie Taras, our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.